However, I must say that we are going to institute the practice that we're going to, if we put up timelines that we would request that to be honored, a good rector, I hope he is in the country, Jansen, also requested, I hope he's out of the country, because he was supposed also to be here today, and they indicated to us that he's overseas in the United States, so he's on his way there. So I hope that stands. The head of the Dr. Kubela would be able to find out for me, because if he is in the country, then it will be a problem if he did not attend today. However, I was quite open and said, look, we will be able to postpone, depending on his availability inside or outside of the country. Also, we had the University of Stellenbosch at some stage that also requested us nearly a two-month delay in presentation to us. And as a chairperson, I'm quite flexible on those things, but there are programs, there are time frames, there are the things that we are looking at. And therefore, so I've agreed last week to both the two institutions on the back of, I think, valuable requests. But let's try and honor those commitments when the committee calls. Let me now indicate to the committee members that I think we've got Member Lehetro that has apologized because he's in fact on a committee visit to Mitchell's Plain by the Committee of Police. Anyone else? Member Vukuza is overseas. And Member Mangena has apologized. Members will deal with the two presentations in relation to the annual report and the discussions related, and then we will deal with the minutes and matters after the last meeting. So we'll do that at the end. Can we then proceed? I would want to hand over to Enes Fass. To Mr. Issel to present the annual report.
Thank you, Chairperson. And let me acknowledge on behalf of the NSFOS your agreement graciously to postpone the presentation to this week. In terms of presenting the annual report, what I intend doing is to focus in on three broad areas. Firstly, to provide an overview of the information relating to the funds that were available in the 2008-09 financial year. Secondly, to identify a set of challenges, organizational challenges, which I will argue, based on the available funding, has impacted on the organizational efficiency and effectiveness on the NSFAS. And then thirdly, to pick up a set of issues relating to the findings of the Auditor General. At the outset, I should just point out for information that a new board was appointed by the then Minister Pondo in July 2008 because the terms of office of the previous board had come to an end. The Minister had reappointed Mr. Sipho Patiana as the chairperson of the board, and I should also inform the committee that Mr. Patiana has tendered his resignation as chairperson with effect from the 31st of October. And the Minister of Higher Education has appointed Professor Patrick Fitzgerald, who is the Deputy Vice-Chancellor for Finance at the University of Uzbekistan, as the new chairperson. In moving towards the information that I'm going to present, I should just, for members who have copies of the handout, there were a few, none of the information has changed, but the slides that were printed were incorrect in the sense that we've cleaned up some of the percentages and that sort of thing. So the figures remain the same. In 2008-2009, 2.4 billion rand was available to the NSFAS, which represents a 31% increase. And if you take 2 years together, 2008 and 9, in the previous financial year, the increase in funding to the NSFAS has gone up by some 67%, which is a substantial increase and a welcome increase given the sort of need and the commitment to access to higher education. But as I will suggest later on, it's also put enormous burdens on the operational functions of the NSFAS. The 2.4 billion includes and not excludes, as I suggest in the slide that you in the document that you have, 39 million rand that was allocated by the Minister of Education at the time in January this year to assist those students who may not have received the full NSFAS funding and their awards did not meet their requirements, particularly in the context of top slicing. And in 2008-09, the funds allocated have supported 153,795 students, which again is an increase from the previous year of 22%. The funding that's been allocated, or the funding that was available, the breakdown of the funding is as is on the screen. The core, the large, just over 50% of it comes from the core funding from the Department of Higher Education, and which is for the loan and bursary scheme. That's what's identified as general education. There's been a teacher education loan and bursary scheme that's been in operation for a number of years, which is separate, which includes Funza Lusaka, and that was 79 million. Additionally, disability bursaries, 18.6 million. SAICA, which is the South African Institute for Chartered Accountants, there's a partnership with the NSFAS and SAICA, where SAICA puts up a portion of the funding to support students pursuing programs with accountancy, and NSFAS provides matching funding for that. And the top-up funding refers to the 39 million that the minister allocated as special funds. In addition, in the last financial year, 200 million rand was allocated for higher education further education and training colleges. And Funza Lushaka, 180 million rand was allocated to Funza Lushaka. Then there are a whole range of scarce skills, what I suppose we would refer to as scarce skills funding for particular programs offered by various government departments, agriculture, social development, which focuses on the training of social workers, the Department of Labor, which comes from the national skills levy, and which largely focuses on scarce skills in science, engineering, technology, and the financial sector. I'm not going to focus on some of the smaller ones, which were historically Irish Aid, which was the historical allocation to NSFAS, and has largely been incorporated into Funza Lushaka. Communicare was a small NGO for which NSFAS has managed funds and is coming to an end. NetBank is a scarce skills, particular skills target. Again, the NSFAS manages, administers the funds for NetBank. We also administer funds for higher education institutions in terms of where institutions are topping up loans from the NSFAS for the institutional loans. And then finally, last, 447 million was reinjected from collected funding from recovered loans from students. Can I carry on if there are questions? I'll be happy to clarification on it. In terms of the demographics of the student recipients, in 2008, 46% of the students were male and 54% female. 92% were African, 5% colored, 2% white, and just under 1% Indian. If we compare the figures for the number of students for the student recipients in 2008 with the total number of undergraduates in higher education, there's some variations, particularly in the case of African students, where a much larger number of students have been the beneficiary of NSFAS grants than the percentage reflected in the total undergraduate population. Similarly, white and Indian students, fewer students have benefited from the NSFAS than the numbers in the total student population. In a sense, that is to be expected given the overall socioeconomic distribution and poverty index in the country. I think the anomaly that certainly we need to look at more carefully is in relation to colored students, where although there's been an increase you see in the first set of figures, over the three-year period, from 3.5 to 5% in terms of allocations to college students, it's lower than the total number of college students in the system. It's not clear whether this either reflects that college students are not currently accessing the NSFAS, or that in terms of the current student population in higher education, that many of the students may not be qualifying. It's not clear, and that's something we need to look at more carefully. I think the male-female figures reflect currently what is going on in higher education, where there are much larger numbers of undergraduate female students. In terms of recovered funds, there's been a steady increase in terms of the absolute amounts of funding from 2006-07. In 2008-09, just over 500 million was recovered, which is a 16% increase from the previous year. And although there's been a decrease in relative terms from the previous year, 6% decrease, again, it's not absolutely clear. We suspect that this may have to do with the downturn in the general economic climate, raise unemployment. However, it does seem that that has stabilized, and the monthly recoveries currently seem to match what we've recovered in 2008-09. In terms of underutilization, which I know has been a particular focus of the committee previously, in the 2008-09 financial year, of the total of the 1.6 billion allocated by the Department of Higher Education, 37 million rand was unspent or unallocated, unutilized by higher education institutions. 11 million rand of the 18.6 million rand allocated for disability students with disabilities was not taken up. 17.7 million of the additional 39 million that the minister provided was not taken up. And of the scarce skills bursaries, 22.7 million of the 315 million was not taken up. I'd like to just focus on some of those. In the case of disabilities, it seems either that in terms of the current capacity of higher education to enroll disabled students in terms of their facilities, may not be adequate. It's also not clear whether from a marketing point of view what enough information is being provided more generally about the fact that there are bursaries that are targeted at disabled students. But our sense also is that in terms of the increases over the years that they have been provided, that it's not been done on a fairly clear analysis of what the current trends in higher education are. It's not been based on an analysis of the existing numbers of disabled students, so the funding, there's a gap between the numbers of students in the system and the funding that's been provided, and that needs to be looked at more carefully. In the case of the additional 39 million and the fact that 17.7 million was left unallocated, I think largely it's based on the fact that this funds came available in January of this year, at the point at which students had graduated and left the institutions, and it was very difficult for institutions, I would imagine, then to get back to the students, to get them to sign new loan forms, etc., because they were out of the system. Scarce skills, as previously indicated to the committee, this is largely, would one either explain in terms of the fact that particular professions may not be as attractive and students may not want to go into those, so the demand may not be high. But in addition, in many cases, particularly in science, engineering, technology, in the financial services sector, a precondition for entry into university programs is an appropriate pass in matric mathematics and science, and that clearly is a continued problem that we face.
I've heard this also from the previous CEO when you visited the institution. And I was hoping I will get a little bit of a different perspective, a refreshing perspective from yourself. Because both on disabilities, I think you started to give a better appreciation for that issue in the one. On the latter one, on scarce skills, I must admit I take great exception to the fact that people are using the red herring that there's a scarce skills and it's maths and science, and that I'm absolutely convinced if there is a, through NSFAS and through the institutions, there's a program that in fact go and sweep people that have scarce skills, but they, for example, second-year dropouts, first-year dropouts, people that did not, were not able to actually enter because they didn't know of bursary opportunities. I'm absolutely convinced that there are people that have access to university ability, but they are not able to access this. So there is this perception that, yes, I understand the scarce skills debate, I know there's a real problem, but even within that real problem, I think there's an opportunity of people that we actually can go and find. So I'm raising this, and I think at the end we'll be able to get a bit of a response on the issue, because it becomes an apology for why we are not able to in fact get people into the scarce skills environment. I just wanted to flag this for a discussion at the end.
Which, can I just say in response in part that I think what the NSFAS needs to do, and in conjunction with the Department of Higher Education, is to analyze what is going on in the system. I don't think we know enough about the number of students coming out, what goes on when they enter higher education. And clearly, in terms of, it's not something in the current presentation, but there has been an issue of communication, the communication strategy of the NSFAS in terms of whether people are aware of all the different elements of the NSFAS, and particularly the scarce skills bursaries. And that is something that the NSFAS is currently, previously a communications officer was appointed last year. There was not a budget at the time, and we are going out in the next few weeks on a fairly major radio program campaign to inform people of the range of bursaries, including the disability bursaries. Finally, in relation to the FET colleges, I think it's pleasing to note that in the 2008-09 financial year, there was a 95% uptake of the funds allocated, which is a significant improvement from the previous year. The fact that there's still a remaining is a cause for concern. And largely, I think it requires a better alignment, which is beginning to happen in terms of the programs that are identified and the colleges identified by the Department of Higher Education. So there may be some students falling through the gaps because all the appropriate programs may not be identified for financial support. Finally, in terms of what the NSFAS has been doing in terms of unutilized funds, in relation to higher education institutions, there are currently two steps being taken. Institutions are now required to provide information three times in the year. If I can, just because I can speak more clearly for this year that I've been focusing on, at the end of August, again in early October, and in early December, to indicate what the unallocated funds are that they've been provided. So, for instance, recently we've reallocated 27 million as a result of the information in the last few weeks as a result of information of unallocated funds. A large part of it, again, is of the 27 million, I think just under 50% of it came from the disability allocation, and also partly from the teacher education, not the Funds al-Rushafa, the teacher education allocation. So I think those steps are beginning to bear fruit. They're clearly not sufficient in terms, we still anticipate there will be some unallocated funds towards the end of the year because of problems within institutions. In relation to, we've also this year, it started last year, but asked that 80% of the institutional claims are in by the end of September, and which has again happened this year. I think the one problem with at an institutional level, which needs to be addressed by the NSFAS, I think the NSFAS has been remiss in the past that in dealing with higher education institutions, it's largely dealt with the financial aid offices and not dealt with the senior management of the institution. So there's been very little interaction between the NSFAS and the vice-chancellors, deputy vice-chancellors, responsible for these matters. And that's something that needs to be taken up and a greater engagement, because I suspect in most cases VCs are not quite clear about what is going on further downstream in the institution. So which
are not that didn't report on time, didn't report accurately? Can you just also, if you don't have the list now, if you can just keep the list for us?
I'll
now
get you the information.
Yeah. But even at the end of this meeting, if somebody...
Yeah, okay, we'll give you. We've got a list of the... Yeah. Of the, there were six... The report talks of six institutions last year that accounted for about 75%.
Yeah.
Of. We can give you that information. Okay. As I indicated at the outset, the increased, substantive increase in funding is welcome. However, it has resulted and impacted on the efficiency of the organization and its effectiveness. Largely, its structure, the systems and the processes that NSFAS has in place has not been adjusted to take into account this additional funding or the expanded mandate in terms of scarce skills, the FET bursaries, the private sector funding that the NSFAS has taken on board, and the strain certainly in personnel resources in terms of particularly at middle management level, but also impacted, as we indicate, in terms of governance, information systems, control procedures and processes, and monitoring mechanisms, all of which have been highlighted in different ways in the Auditor General's report. The specific challenges that we face in terms of structure, the NSFAS started essentially as a loan and bursary scheme. It now has a range of different schemes within that scheme. Apart from the core scheme, there's what we've called the scarce skills bursaries, the FET bursaries, the private sector funding, and all of this is currently managed in one single division. So there's been no separation within the NSFAS structure of say, for at least between the core between the loan management system and the bursary system. And again, within all of that, for the different government departments, the private sector, the FET sector, which means effectively we have got one conglomeration dealing with all of this, with impacts on the information we provide, can impact is a risk in terms of the accuracy of the information, whether we can respond in a timely manner to requests for information, and a range of those sorts of issues. In terms of staff capacity, again, although the NSFAS staff has increased from what I think was about 25 to 30 to currently about 80, including a large number of temporary staff. Certainly at the middle management level, partly because the structure has remained flat, there's a problem. And in addition, in terms of specialist staff, we think that in certain areas such as finance, we understaffed and under-resourced. In certain specialist functions like procurement, which is increasing in the NSFAS and which was identified as a problem, as we will come to towards the, in terms of the AG's report, we don't have the staff in place to manage all of the different the complex processes the NSFAS is currently involved in. The current infrastructure, the building and infrastructure is inadequate for the 80 staff. In fact, it probably doesn't meet, as we speak, the health and safety requirements, and we are in process of negotiating with the Treasury for permission to move out of this building and to seek new premises. In terms of systems and processes, as I indicated, the information systems themselves are problematic. We collect a large, vast amount of information, but most of this is collected, if you want, in relation to what we call transaction processing, the loan agreements that are signed, the claims that are sent in, the payments that are made, the recoveries from students, etc., and the more what I would call management information about where students are coming from, the programs they're following, the kind of questions that you've posed about what is happening to students who have backgrounds in science and mathematics, etc. That sort of information is in the system, but again, it's not easy to disentangle. It doesn't facilitate easy analysis. So we need to rethink how we collect the information and restructure, and also to make the system at the NSFAS speak to the higher education management information system, because currently the two systems don't speak to each other, which doesn't facilitate the kind of analysis that may be necessary. The loan agreement system remains manual and is inadequate for the large volumes. This year we're expecting just over 200,000 loan agreement forms, and although institutions have met the 80% target in terms of submitting by the end of September, it means that we sit with large numbers of paper in the office. We don't have appropriate risk-proof facilities for keeping those loan agreement forms while they're at the office. And then the processing, capturing, scanning, all of that creates backlogs, which in the case of the 2008 financial year, delayed the financial preparation of the financial statements because the backlogs were only finally sorted out in around April or May of this year, which is clearly a major problem for the organization going forward. And then finally, in terms of systems and processes, the software and the IT technology that we use was largely developed in-house, the proprietary, what we call proprietary software, specific to the NSFAS, which makes it very difficult to upgrade and update and also to get appropriate technical support, because only the technical support has to be provided in-house, unlike off-the-shelf. If you take a common example, if you're using a Microsoft product, it's updated regularly, you get technical support, and they can adjust it for your specific needs. So clearly, the IT system that we have has outlived its usefulness for the MSFOS. And then moving to how the organization is addressing these challenges, in 2008, it initiated a business process re-engineering project to assess what its current operations were and what interventions were necessary in order to make it, to ensure that the operations became more efficient and effective. In that context, we are currently in the process of introducing a whole lot of new software for the financial systems, which will automate and integrate the different systems that we have, and also ensure better control mechanisms in the different processes when the claims come, when the payments are made, and so forth. This may have been reported previously. We're also currently piloting this year an electronic version of the loan agreement form, which is being piloted with the Tshwane University of Technology, the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and the University of Cape Town. We will, at the end of this period, assess what, and this will, the electronic form essentially means it will get rid of the paper loan agreements, and it will both fast-track, make it facilitate the submission of the loan agreements between the institution and the NSFOS, and fast-track the claims and payment process. Currently, we work on a 30-day turnaround. We anticipate that with an electronic system in place, it will be somewhere between 48 hours to 72 hours. The problem, apart from assessing what is currently in place, we need to develop a detailed plan for next year about how this can be rolled out in 2011, because there are implications for institutions in terms of readjusting their own IT systems, etc., the additional costs involved. And more importantly, not having a manual loan agreement form, from a legal point of view, requires something called an advanced electronic signature, which is something that the Department of Communications is in the process of establishing. There have been no service providers currently registered to provide that service. So we are awaiting developments there, because at the moment what is happening, we have the loan forms. In the case of the three institutions, they're submitting it electronically, but they also have to get the form signed by students and then submit the manual form, because the loan agreement is between the NSFOS and the individual student concerned. In terms of staff capacity, there has been a process of advertising and filling in a new post, particularly in the financial area, procurement officer and so forth. But clearly, there needs to be a bigger organizational review of the structure and the skills audit. And in one sense, we're sitting with a catch-22 situation where we're waiting for the outcomes of the ministerial review, which may again impact on the mandate and the work of the NSFOS, and we want to ensure that the organizational review is done in the context of the recommendations that may flow from this. In terms of some of the more immediate issues that have been identified by the Auditor General, we are currently in the process of doing a governance review to ensure that all our systems and procedures are in line with the existing regulatory requirements. We don't have in place a fraud prevention plan, a business continuity plan. All of that is currently being done, and we anticipate would be completed before the end of this year. And in addition, we have a procurement policy, but as we will argue later on, it's not been updated, and there have been problems in the procurement process, and so we're looking at revising our procurement policy. And then finally, if I can turn to the AG's report, which really, and the focus on procurement, I think, is important in that context. I think at the outset, it should be noted that the NSFOS received an unqualified report. However, the AG did report an irregular expenditure, and the irregular expenditure was in relation to the business re-engineering project that the NSFOS undertook in 2008. It's an irregular expenditure in the amount of R1,185,600. which occurred as a result, where I think, as I understand it, the initial process for the procurement was within the NSFOS procedures and framework, but the work of the consultant continued to be extended on a monthly or two-monthly basis, and none of that was properly secured in terms of procurement processes. The board, and one of the reasons we had asked for the postponement was because the board had not met to discuss formally the outcomes of the AG's process and its own investigation. The audit committee of the board, because the board had been alerted to the problem in early to late 2008, in early 2000 and early this year, had initiated an investigation by PricewaterhouseCoopers, which was completed in April, and which found that the policy, procurement policy, was not consistently applied, that a lot of the relevant documentation for procurement was not in place, and that the policy was not aligned with national guidelines. Subsequently, these findings were confirmed by the Auditor General in terms of the lack of appropriate policies and procedures in place. The board considered these findings at its meeting on Friday, and in the board's view, and I've given a summary of its resolution, it found it agreed with the finding of that there was a breach in the regulatory process due to negligence, but it did not find any fraudulent intent. However, it regards the matter seriously. It did not condone the expenditure, and has and initiated a further inquiry in order to assess what action, if any, it needs to take against the officials who may have been involved in the process, and also finally to look at whether all the deliverables that were part of the contract were put in place. I just mentioned quickly, because I also wanted to talk about what steps have been taken in terms of procurement. This point of contingent liability is highlighted in the AG's report insofar. The NSFAS keeps aside a set, if you want, cash portion in order to, in case of any emergencies, etc. It requires National Treasury approval to do so currently, and that approval is now in place. It wasn't at the time. There had been a request to the Minister of Finance, but it hadn't been completed at the time of the AG's report. In the meantime, while the board is undertaking its investigation about what happened and why it happened and what action to take, there have been certain steps put in place. The CEO is no longer authorized to delegate or authorize any expenditure in excess of 500,000 rand. All of that has to go to the board. Previously, the CEO could authorize, and then the board subsequently ratified the expenditure. All expenditure, all procurement processes have now been centralized in the CFO's office, and a procurement committee has been established. So irrespective of the nature of the procurement, whether it's 50,000 rand or 500,000 rand, it has to go via the procurement committee and a proper process, and the decisions of the committee noted, minuted, etc., and reported to the board. And then finally, Chair, this is information that the committee will be familiar with. As you know, in the course of this year, the Minister of Higher Education established a review of the NSFAS, which is looking at all aspects of the NSFAS operations and functions, but in particularly issues around the current the award mechanism, the way it's determined, the means test, and many of the issues that I think the committee has previously focused on. And we anticipate, it's not absolutely clear, Dr. Kubela may have more information. The committee is meant to be reporting towards the end of October. Not towards the end of October, towards the end of November. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot. Members, you've now got a brief presentation on some of the workings in 08 or 09 or 10. And then it's always difficult because you're dealing with the current financial year and you reflect on the past. So some of those things, I normally advise that some of these things you will find even in the questions, and we'll just need to manage it. We are weary that we're dealing with the old financial year, but we are in the current one, and always there's overlapping issues. So I'll allow that flexibility in a sense, if you can be with us. Dr. Chang. Thank you very much for that overview. I was going to ask a question about the fact that the Auditor General drew attention to those particular items. And what I thought I'd find in your report is a listing of the management actions that would be taken to ensure that it doesn't happen again, and that you would give it a date, that is, that there will be deadlines essentially for fixing the problem. So I was wondering whether you would comment on that, please.
Can we take three and then we move by?
Thanks, Chair. I have a couple of issues that I just want to raise. The first one is around what the AG has picked up as lack of effective, efficient, and transparent system and internal controls regarding performance management within the institution. Just want to know if all management have signed their performance agreements or contracts, and if so, have all of them met their deliverables, their targets, and if not, what is being done around that so that we have a clarity in terms of your performance. As well, I'm trying to link that so that we understand where is the situation in terms of performance within the organization. The other issue that I tried to look at your report, one would want to understand in terms of performance of the board itself. There is no reflection even on your annual report in terms of we see members of the board, but we don't know whether the board has been meeting. If all members have been there, there is no indication, because that's what would guide us to say the institution is under, you know, it's being monitored and all those things. I couldn't pick that up. I tried to look around the report. I just couldn't. If we can be given that report, to say these are the members who are members of the board, these are their meetings and all that. But the other issue is on rural schools that you've set as a target. I think it's target number one on your report, that you are setting to visit three rural schools. It's a concern, Chair. Out of the entire country, unless if I'm reading your target incorrectly, as reported in your annual report, to say in the entire country, how do you set a target of three, unless if I don't understand that, visit to rural NGOs, visit to rural, it's on the annual report, page 17 and 18, performance goal number one. And then you're saying at least three, at least four. In the entire country, I just want, there's no way you can miss that target. It's very moderate, it's very, you know, it's something that somebody just sits and decides we're going to do this and then we achieve it quickly. It's not going to be difficult to attend to three rural schools. Definitely, I can do that within a week. But I'm just saying, exactly, you know, but I'm just raising it as a concern in terms of the targets, Chair, even going forward, that when an institution sets target, it's got to be in line with what we want to achieve as a country and what the mandate of the institution is. If we are talking about trying to make sure that many young people access higher education, you can't have a target of three schools in a rural area in the entire country. So I'm just saying in terms of the CEO having to look at the targets, especially for the next financial year, in the beginning of the year. Last thing, Chair, I was hoping, I know that you are reporting in terms of the financial year that has ended, but are there concerns that you have a review going ahead that is ending December? We have January. Institutions are raising their costs. I know VETS is raising with 10%, UJ is 12%, University of Free State is about 12%. What is the plan for the students for January? With the review, we know that there are students who are requiring access in terms of registration fees, just so that we have a sense of what is the plan now. The last one, Chair, can we get an indication? I didn't specifically get the amount of the surplus. To say, is it necessary for us to have, sorry, let me just get to the page. It's page 50. That speaks on the surplus that the institution has as part of the report by the AG. And I was trying to find where it's specifically highlighted in the amount. How much is it? Do we really need that? Because I feel that we have a number of students who are still needing access to tertiary institutions. We have a problem of students who are not able to the top-up issue, that they're not able to have full 100%. Do we really need that? What is this emergency that you are calling to say the surplus is to deal with emergency? Thanks, Chair.
Mr. Makabela.
Thanks, sir. Sir. Yeah, no, okay. On the slides, the report that you were using, I'll be following, but the first indicates the administrative capacity or lack thereof of these institutions to manage NSFAS funding. And I think you have acceded to that. And you're saying there will be remedial actions being taken. But I think you're focusing more on NSFAS, not necessarily the institutions. And I think institutions themselves have got similar problems. We may want to know how your own process will be reconciled with those of institutions so that at the end there's no underutilization of this particular funds. I'm just saying our view as well was that we need to have a situation where there's full bursaries to students, including issues of transport and so on, which in some instances may even have to be in cash. And that will actually throw a serious administrative burden to both yourselves and the institutions if to actually happen. The other, you're saying it has been very difficult for institutions of higher learning to allocate these bursaries. There are conditions that exclude many students. This will need to be highlighted as to which are these conditions so that we get to know exactly if the bursary is there and the institutions can't allocate because many of these are excluded. Is it just on the threshold, or are there other conditions that we may want to be highlighted on so that we will deal with it? There's money that arrived January this year, and the target group was students who were out of the institution or the system already, meaning that the funds missed the target. And those students are actually still owing, in my view. Besides that, they needed to have been assisted. The problem, or their problem, was that somebody did not facilitate or process that transaction earlier before they get out of the system. And you're saying because they're out of the system, not that we don't know them, but you may no longer want to give them their funds. Meaning that a different group altogether will then have to receive those funds. But how do we get to give these students who went out a relief? Is it that we can't do anything at all? So those funds either should be allocated to other people or must leave. The last, no. Because the other one is, we have got to know, we came to know that institutions are allocating these funds in a manner that is inconsistent and at times discriminatory. You find one institution processing this differently to another or other institutions. Is there anything in your own powers to can try and deal with this issue, to ensuring that the procedures are almost the same, you know. So that you don't go into one institution and find they're doing something, addressing the issues differently altogether as if we're not talking of the same people. Coming to the audits, I might not have got time to go through the bigger volume or the actual audit report itself, the annual report itself. But, Chair, I thought in the document that you were presenting to us, you talk of all those issues, but there's nothing that says this is your risk analysis that inform your measures or remedial action in terms of what could happen in terms of problems that you have financially and so on and so on. Perhaps it's the very last chair is just to understand the status from the AG as to whether your report is unqualified, disqualified, is it a disclaimer. Just in, I think, in a quick when we will get to know. I haven't picked it up on this, and I think it's important for us to know whether the finances are safe or it's a health institution. It may be that now that the National Treasury agreed for you to retain the surplus funding, perhaps you put a good motivation for that, you know. But I just wanted to know the status. Thanks.
They actually did report on it, but it is unqualified. However, is that a true reflection of actually proper delivery is another question, but we'll, I think that's a deeper discussion. I always believe that, you know, unqualified can mean compliance at its very minimum on financial matters. It doesn't necessarily mean the developmental, the transformation issues, the actual impact issues. So that's a different debate, though. But I want to give over to yourself. I think there was three important kind of questions and subsections to it, and then I want to hand over to the other members.
So, the Chair, can I just start with the last point? Because I think you're right, the AG's report focuses on the financial aspects. As you know, and it's been reported in the media currently, in future in general, in both in relation to government departments and other public entities, the AG will be focusing on the sort of strategic goals, objectives, on a broader performance management system. I think the problem at the moment, we've had some initial discussions with the AG's office for next year, and the real problem in terms of that system, and I think it's currently being discussed by the AG's office with the Treasury, is the cost of those audits, because the estimation for the NSFAS audit, if they were to do that, was, I think, in the region of $1.5 million, and they want us to fund it. And we, our approach has been, well, you'd have to go to the Treasury because we need to get the funding. So I think that process, the sort of broader kind of audit, is starting to take effect. I think in relation to the first question about
value for money.
Sorry?
Minister of Finance yesterday spoke about value for money.
Value for money. Well, but that's what they're going to be assessing.
Okay.
In terms of the AG's report and the deadline, so we have, I didn't report on it because it's work we've now started. There's some of what I've identified in relation to procurement, the fraud policy, business continuity plan, which addressed us, is currently underway and will be completed this year. We just started this work. We have set up, and the audit committee met last week. We've now identified all the actions from the AG's office where we're in the process of looking at which are the priority ones and what deadlines we set, given the capacity we have. So that's in process. We don't have a document, but we can let you have a document of what we've identified and what the deadlines and timeframes will be, which we finalize in the next week or so. As far as performance agreements are concerned, the board had made a decision that there should be performance agreements. They should have been signed on the 1st of August 2009. There wasn't a system in place prior to that. At the point that I came into office, which was in August of this year, none of the performance agreements have been signed. There were drafts that were in place. As part of the process, we then looked at what was in the drafts to try to clean up, because there were quite a few overlaps in responsibilities, and performance agreements have been signed. They were signed with effect from this month. Effectively, what that means is effectively half the year has gone with no performance agreement. And quite frankly, if you come into office in August, it's very difficult, not having been party to the process, to assess the staff for work that should have been done, other than in a very sort of compliance and due ACOC. So we have a system going forward now that's in place, and for the rest of the staff, the entire, at the moment, the performance agreements have been signed with the senior managers, and for the rest of the organization, that process is now underway, and we would have performance agreements in place for the whole organization starting on the 1st of April 2010. I agree in terms of the targets. I can't speak for how these targets were set. I think there are lots of issues around NSFAS strategic goals and objectives and the general targets, even whether the targets in some cases are measurable, etc., which needs to be looked at more carefully. We started the process in terms of the 3-year plan that was submitted, but it does require, that was done in quite a tight time frame after I came into office. It does require a more careful consideration of what are the strategic priorities. If you look at our strategic goals at the moment, it's a massive document. It means, well, there's no real, everything is a priority, which means there's no real priority that we've identified. So I think there's a process. I think you've identified. We have started to work this year more carefully. Well, the NGO process has always been in place, but we have identified other service providers who are working not with one or two schools, but working in particular regions with a range of schools, including some new innovations, industrial theatre groups that go to schools or communities and present the play, which focuses on the NSFAS and issues of education. So I think that's going forward, we would see a lot more of from a communications point of view, which has been a big issue for the NSFAS currently. In terms of the issue of institutional costs and fees, it's not within the purview of the NSFAS. We don't engage with institutions about the fees. That's a matter for the Minister of Higher Education and Training. So we're not able to. Clearly, what it would do is suggest we require more funding for future. And in my view, as I've indicated previously to this committee, the more funding we get, the better there would be. But we're not directly involved in that process. I think there are processes in place to enable institutions, it started last year, to get upfront funding, which means for registration purposes they're able to provide students with the who are qualified for the upfront registration fee. Not all institutions have taken it up. We can give you a list. I don't have this on me, but this year it did seem to work because large numbers were able to register. So that problem is beginning to be addressed in the sense that institutions start taking up the issue of fees. In terms of the contingent liability, whether we should keep that's an issue that the board is currently in, whether we need, I think we're keeping 120 million. It's not absolutely clear why we need to keep them, because the kinds of emergencies that we face, this year possibly there are some cases of the SAICA funding where SAICA have given bursaries to more students than they haven't agreed to. But we're looking at very small amounts, which can be managed from the unallocated funds that always remain small amounts. So I think it's a matter that the board needs to consider about whether it's necessary, and if it's necessary, what the amount is. There's been no actuarial basis on which it's sort of the NSFAS has done an assessment of what it thinks may be an appropriate figure and adopted. So if we are going to do it, firstly, we need a more rigorous analysis to determine what it would be and why would we require it. In terms of administrative capacity, we run training programs with higher education institutions, with financial aid offices, etc. I think the problem going forward, as I indicated, is that we've not been, all of these issues, what we may think are institutional inefficiencies or problems in financial aid offices, we interact only at the level of those offices. We've not made it, we've not taken up these issues more systemically, either through the higher organization of vice chancellors or with individual vice chancellors. And as I was suggesting, what we need to do more carefully as we go forward is to engage at the level of the senior management of the institution. So even the ELAP, the introduction of the electronic loan agreement system, where we piloted, has been done with the FAOs. I'm certain if a vice chancellor at the institution found out that there may be costs that the institution is incurring or it impacts on the way his staff are organized, there would be questions asked. So it's quite clear to me that if we want to, whatever changes we want to introduce, which impact on the institution, has to be discussed and the vice chancellor is consulted for the management if it's not directly the vice chancellor. The NSFAS, quite frankly, has been shy to deal with, I'm not sure why, but there has been really no relationship developed at the level of the senior management of the institution. So it's something we certainly need to go in forward need to make a priority. In terms of the scarce skills exclusions, it was the issue that the chair raised. The exclusions, well, I think the word exclusions was used, is really about
the kinds of programs for which the funding is provided, whether, and that's the debate, whether the appropriate number of students with the skills and backgrounds to enter those programs. So it's not preventing access in the sense of saying you can't come into an institution, but if you want to do a BCom accountancy, you have to have certain preconditions that you need to meet, and that's the what was it about whether there are enough people and what the debate on that means. So that's what the conditions are, if you want. It's not specific conditions set by an institution. So in the department, if you take Punza Lushaka, which would be an easier example, it's provided to because we need more teachers. The uptake has been slow, but it's gathering pace, which partly may be because not large numbers of people want to do teaching. There's a whole range of complex factors about what funding is provided and how you bring people into the system. So it's conditions of that sort, where the specific agriculture says it's only supporting agricultural programs, and then it depends on whether you attracting students, whether you marketing those programs, and whether students are coming in and have the appropriate backgrounds to do those programs.
So the problem is that we might have put more funding on programs that do not have big ones.
Well, my view is that we haven't done enough analysis of the funding that's available. So if you take all of those care skills funding, agriculture, social development, etc., we haven't done enough analysis. Or the disability one is a case in point, about what's the current situation in terms of enrollment in higher education institutions. How do we project from there? What's the likely uptake? And so funds have been allocated with really no real rigorous analysis behind it about why it sounds like a good idea, we need to give more money for disabled students, but we haven't really assessed what the need is, which institutions can better use the funds in terms of their infrastructure to meet the needs of disabled students, because not all our institutions are set up to do so. So in that sense, I think we certainly need to do, the NSFAS can't do all of that on its own, it needs to do that partly with institutions and with the Department of Higher Education.
It literally relates to the support mechanisms. However, I'm not a subscriber to a view that there wouldn't be enough students from the disabled sector. I'm not subscribing to a view that there would not. I'm saying if there was $1 billion spent on care skills, then there wouldn't have been enough, right? But with the envelope that's there, I do believe, if you've got the right strategy and the intervention mechanisms and the communications, that you'll be able to fill that. But even understanding then that you possibly bring people that just entering that bar, that, you know, the possibility even of failure can be there, but it's in the mechanisms of support that you're planting. But that's a discussion that we actually need to have, because the committee is raising this consistently, but we're not getting the type of 3 months down the line when we meet in NSFAS, we're not hearing the refreshing kind of information on actions that has emerged from that meeting that we had at this at the venue itself of NSFAS. But let's look at that as recommendations out of it. Can we move to the...
No.
I asked around the board. I recommend to committee...
Yes, sorry. The annual report does under each subcommittee indicate, I'm not sure if it is for the board as a whole, what the number of board meetings were and where the people.
There's nothing.
There's a table under each.
It's only subcommittees.
So it's a subcommittee, yeah, it's not for the overall board, so I would have to get the information. But I thought there was one for the board as well.
The reason why that question becomes relevant, we think it's not only related, it's to do with most, if not all, of all the institutions in higher education and in education in general, in terms of the responsibilities of the councils, of boards, vis-a-vis their obligation to the management structure. So I think it's in that spirit that we're raising. We do believe that we can't only ask management those issues. It must now. Boards have responsibilities if they're supposed to be there. Otherwise, we don't need them
to get the information and provide it to the people. It's not in yet, except for the subcommittees which are identified.
Yeah, can we just assume that in future it's part of the report as an annual, because it becomes a public document. We've got to know the people who are sitting there. actually, that they are doing their work and what is expected. But lastly, so on the issue that I raised, maybe as a comment, according to the LG's report, what you responded and what I have here is that there is no approval that you have, unless it's wrong, from finance in terms of your surplus. And
point,
here it's reflected as 122, not 120.
What I'm saying, the AG, the Minister of Finance, the NSFAS had requested approval a while ago. That approval has finally come through. So at the time the AG reported it hadn't come through yet.
Can we actually move to the... Look, I see three ends in this row, so I'm going to allow the three ends here.
Chairperson, Member Kubai has adequately covered me in her questions. However, I have a comment to make, if you allow me. If you allow me to do my comment. Chair, this country was for a long time an international pariah due to its racial classification according to color. We are now in the new era. We have outgrown color bar. It is for me unacceptable to hear that we still refer to fellow South Africans as colored, black, white, and so on, and not as fellow South Africans. For this has an element of division of our nation, and this color thing may have influence in the manner in which bursaries are allocated. If we have to look at people, students, and classify them according to color, it might have that element that says, I give him because he's a colored, I give him because he's a black. And I think we should outgrow that. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Buinamo. Ponsani?
It's always good to have an assistant next to you. Chair, paragraph one must first acknowledge the financial relief that the scheme provides to many of our needy students and parents, of course. From that, I would love to have known how many students whose application have been rejected and the reasons for the rejection. Because, you know, you go to some institutions, you find students saying that they've been, their applications have been rejected with no reasons supplied. And one would have liked to know from the department how many of these cases we have. Then lastly, on page 2, the 39 million which was allocated by the minister to assist students who had received an award smaller than what they required, what process is being followed? The student receives less award, does he reapply, or is the institution that determines who of those students will get more of what they need? And lastly, on page 4, 5% not used up. Where the department allocates budget per college based on courses offered at that college. I'm a bit concerned given the history of our country. You'll find that the previously, I won't avoid that colleague to go back to racial classification. The previously disadvantaged FETs, you'll find that the courses that were offered there were not the same as FETs that were run by the former departments. Wouldn't say that the allocation of funds according to the courses offered at FET would, in a way, disadvantage students in those FETs. I would just to know what your views are. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to get some few checks here that the electronic loan agreement, whether is it user friendly for students to be able to, you know, not to get difficult to also access it. But also, I just seen in your opening remarks, you know, you said it will also reduce administrative burden. I just want to check whether you don't mean that you will retrench other people. If that's so, I'm going to have a problem with that. The other aspect is that in your strategy goal 4, in terms of your marketing strategies, you're speaking about in terms of you know, these marketing strategies engaging with 5 radio stations and 4 print media for adverts. I just want to check what criteria have you used to identify those radio stations and those print adverts, because I'm just looking in terms of whether have you tried to consider the most disadvantaged students. You know, we've got too many radio stations around ourselves, and also what consideration have you made in that regard. The other aspect is that you've got an audit committee, I believe. I just want to check what if you've got an audit committee, why should you have challenges in terms of following correct systems? Because from time to time, the audit committee provides recommendations and process that need to be followed. Why couldn't be able to also assist you in ensuring that it is correct processes? Because, you know, if you've got clear policies in terms of how do you operate in your procurement processes, I really can't understand. I also understand that the procurement committee is regulated in your office as CEO. The relation there, you know, we must be able to check, because you might find that, you know, these other issues that are just pop up, they are just negligence that also are some of your responsibilities, because you never maybe made follow-ups or check-up in terms of those issues. If you can be able to provide me with those ones. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Might have been brief, I promise you. On the loan, actually, the previous member covered me, except that I don't remember a time when we knew if there's a particular percentage. I mean, once it's a loan, it might be having some percentage, such that interest, in terms of interest, if it's interest-free or if there is interest, how much percent? Because I think it was asked some other time, but I don't remember what the response was. And secondly, on the recipient demographics, I want to comment, actually, and plead with the previous speaker, actually, that it's good to have this male-female African-colored white Indian, because it assists us, actually, to see how we are receiving, because we have a history that definitely shows that there was a time when there was a group that was not receiving. And until we are certain that things are okay, for sure this should remain. Thank you.
Chairperson, when you go through this report, you find that there are institutions that are not good in reporting, or they report late, they give inadequate reports, sometimes they don't report at all. And I know, Chair, you have just requested for the list of those universities, but my question is, what is it that you do with those universities? Because really, they disadvantage our learners. I don't think it's enough for you to just report us to say they don't give reports. What happens? What is it that you do to with them, for them to make sure, for you to make sure that they do report? And again, under the underutilization of funds, is there any picture that you can give to us just to say which of the institutions are really you get a big bulk of the funds that are underutilized, so that you can have that idea, that picture, is to say these are the institutions that do not make use of all the funds that are allocated to them, if ever you do have that list. Thank you.
I'm not 100% happy about the issue of the scarce skills. What is NSFAS doing? It's fine to say that it must, there must be a strategy and so on to utilize these funds and get as many students in as possible. But what is NSFAS doing to ensure that these funds are utilized? The issue on the resources and the technology being used, everything that's still manual, how far is this process? It was early in the year when we were there, it was rather chaotic when we had to get over these boxes and things. How far is this process? Because I think it was mentioned when we were at that visit, when we were at the centre, that processes are in place. So how far has it moved to get the systems fully automated? Thanks, Chief.
Can I start? Because there were two questions around this. EDF is not an electronic loan agreement forms. It's not a system where students enter themselves, go to a computer and enter the information. It's the information that's drawn from the registration enrollment information that the university captures as part of its application process. Currently, there are two processes that have to fill in a separate form. So in future, when this comes on stream, it will come out of the university own enrollment information and application form. So the student won't directly be responsible for doing that. I can't comment on whether it would lead to retrenchments or not. I suspect it's how institutions rearrange their internal, they continue to perform the function anyway. In terms of the resources and where we are, as I indicated, we currently this year piloted for the first time the three institutions. The pilot is coming to an end. We are now going to assess what came out with the three institutions, what problems, if any, were, what needs to be resolved. But the key problem in terms of the two issues, one is the NSFAS, in introducing this electronic loan system, did not have a plan in place to say this is how we're going to roll it out over the next 2 or 3 years. There was a pilot project, but there's no, at least I'm not familiar with any documentation. It's not been well documented in the organization. So what we need to do is to develop a project plan to say, based on what's come out of this pilot, what is it that we need to do? How do we roll it out? What are the cost implications? Because none of that has been done, in my view. And I've not had access to information and documentation. It was discussed at the board meeting because I don't have a level of comfort as an acting CEO in my case that if I was told roll it out next year that I'm in a position to do so. So we're in the process of assessing what happened and then developing an appropriate project plan in 2010. So if it rolled out, to start rolling it out more carefully in 2011, because there's implications for what institutions need to do. They need to change the systems in a technical sense, and they need to be, so the three were ready to do so. And the three have been chosen because in the case of Tshwane University and University of KZN, they are part of a group that uses the same IT technology with a company called ITS. UCT and three or four other institutions use a different company. So that allows us to look at what the differences are for the different institutions. So my estimation would be that from a rollout point of view, the earliest it would be It may not be all institutions, because one would also have to look at the capacity in different institutions, but it will start in 2011. We will continue with the three next year, and there may be one or two others who could come on stream next year. But the key problem still is this electronic signature, because without that, we in a sense doing two parallel systems. We're still getting the manual forms with tennis. And that's the matter we're engaging with the Department of Communications, because they accredit service providers to provide that service. I'm not going in any particular order. In terms of the radio stations, there were five chosen because parking was a budgetary constraint, because none of this was budgeted for at the time. We are now rolling out with all the SABC radio stations this year. So it will cover the entire country in whatever language, the different language stations that are on offer. And including in terms of media, more generally, we try to use national media where necessary and possible, but a lot of the time we're looking at community newspapers, magazines, the target schools, etc. So it is looking at a more nuanced communication strategy. It's looking at something that nuances and targets different regions in different ways. As far as the role of the audit committee is concerned, there is an audit committee. In my view, at least in the time I've been there, it's a fairly active committee. It's done quite a lot in terms of the processes that are currently in place. We have an agreement now that the chair of the audit committee will meet with the CEO and the senior management team on a monthly basis to look at what the audit problems, challenges the organization face, and whether it's addressing those appropriately. I can't really speak for what happened previously, but it is a very active committee currently. In terms of interest, I'm sure this information that previously been provided, the NSFAS currently charges interest, which is 80% of the prime rate, and the prime rate at the moment, I forget it, I think it's 7.18%, I think it's 7.6%, so it would be 80% of that. To be quite frank, we don't have information, and I think this is an anomaly in the system, of how many students apply for NSFAS loans and how many don't qualify for NSFAS loans. It's information I know in the past when I was in the department we tried to get from institutions, and it wasn't very accurate information. So that should be possible, but currently it's not been collected in any consistent fashion. So it's difficult to answer the particular question, but I think it's an important point. In terms of institutions not giving reports, well, I think there are two issues. One, it seems to me, is that the NSFAS has started the process, and I think the engagement with vice-chancellors, there's already some, I mean, I can see this year, although I have not been involved in that process, there's clearly been a greater cooperation between the NSFAS and the institution. So the 80% target that was set has been met, I think, by 20 of the 23 institutions in terms of submitting their forms. I think there are cases, in my view, where it may be necessary. So there are some institutions recently, or not some, one institution recently reported where it's been providing double funding to institutions using NSFAS funding. So they gave us care skills bursary, plus they gave a loan, and now they're asking us what to do about it. My view is in some cases such as that, we need to start putting in measures to say to institutions, if you don't get your act together in those sorts of measures, because it's a fairly straightforward administrative management of funding that you've been provided for, we may have to consider in future whether we cut your allocation if you're not able to provide an appropriate service. On a very basic service where you should not be giving more money to one student and your system should be able to pick it up. Because that money becomes unallocated funds eventually, because they pick it up quite late in the year and then doesn't get allocated in that financial year. In terms of the issue of causes, I think, as I indicated, in the case of the FET colleges, the uptake has gone up from 67% to 95%. Which suggests to me, I'm not interacted with the department on this, is that there's greater alignment between the department strategy in terms of the courses, programs that are being offered, the students who require funding in the FET colleges. So it seems to me that we're starting to move towards a situation by hopefully next year there'll be no funds left over in the FET colleges. And I think in the FET, 95% intake compared to the problem we have in higher education is given that the FETs are not set up, don't have the same infrastructure, etc., that higher education institutions have. So I think in that sense, the FET uptake is very welcome. I think I've covered everything, Chair. I may have...
Can I ask you, how long are you going to be acting? Members, I think we've received the explanations. I think just in terms of our time, because it will not obviously not be the last time that we'll be engaging. There's, for example, just on the administrative side, you get all these smaller funds. And is that 100% for